I want to lay out a few characters in context so that you can understand them. One of them is Ahab, and you've heard Ahab's saying before, I'm sure. And if you have not heard of Ahab, you have definitely heard of his wife. His wife is called Jezebel. And you don't have to be a church person to be familiar with Jezebel. Jezebel's name has become synonymous with treachery and promiscuity and betrayal. Her name has become interchangeable that you don't even need a Bible at all to know what Jezebel, if you're not careful, your grandmama would have called you, you look like a Jezebel. You ain't going out of this house looking like Jezebel. With a mouthful of snuff, she'd be telling you, look like Jezebel, that's too tight. You know you ain't worn 10 since Vietnam. You know how they talk to you. Well, they got that name from this woman who was married to Ahab. So you're going to run into these two people, Ahab and Jezebel. They are husband and wife. They are king and queen. And they are king and queen of the northern province. And then you're going to run into this name, Elijah, because God sends Elijah to challenge what is going on between Ahab and Jezebel. And then you're going to occasionally run into Obadiah, whose name you will remember having written a book of the Bible, but you will come to understand that Obadiah is serving now up under King Ahab as his COO, his administrator. He gets everything done. He handles everything, and he's running everything. And then there is this nameless character who is Elijah's servant that we will see later in the text that is important. Now that we have the characters, let me explain some things with you. I want you to understand that Rahab is not a part of the family. Jezebel is not a part of the family. Jezebel is a result of an alliance that occurs through the two families getting together and making an agreement that she was not a part of. And her marriage to Ahab is more political than it is romantic. They made a deal since she was the princess of another country, Phoenicia. She was the princess of that country, that if she married Ahab, who was the king over the northern province of Israel, they would come together as a conglomerate, and it was how they negotiated the deal with Jezebel's life. And I want to talk, and I'm not trying to paint Jezebel to be this amazingly wonderful person, but the more I studied about Jezebel, I understood what made her evil. See, you have to understand somebody's story before you start judging them, because we have a tendency, we like to put people in compartments. This one is good, this one is bad, this one is right, this one is wrong, this one is a man of God, this one is Satan's godchild. We love to put them in cubicles, but in reality, you can't really judge what I did if you don't understand why I did it. Jezebel never asked for Ahab. She never asked to leave her country and her kin and be connected. Her parents and the countries worked out a deal with her life. They prostituted her through this marriage before it ever began. And she left Phoenicia. Phoenicia is known for its ships, its ability to build ships and to do trade. Phoenicia was a progressive, metropolitan, liberal city that did trade with people all over the world. And she was used to living and growing up as a princess in a city with affluent people and people of means, and they had diverse religions and diverse ideas, and they traveled merchants from afar, and they built ships that we still study today. Phoenician ships are famous all over the world. Some have even suggested that they came to America on Phoenician ships before Columbus ever set sail. Phoenicia was progressive and mobile, and she was the princess of that city until they snatched her away from that city and sent her out into this desert dry place with these Hebrew people. singing songs and dancing on dirt. And she was frustrated. They were nomadic. They were moving all the time. They didn't get along with each other. They were always having internal disputes. Have you ever married into a messy family? Oh, I'm gonna bring it where you can get it. And now you gotta deal with all of that drama, and you didn't ask for this. She married into a messy nation and a messy family and a messy situation, and she missed home really bad. She missed home. She missed the ships and the interesting conversations and the way they did things and the open-mindedness and the liberal ideologies that comes from being from Phoenicia. And all they were talking about over here was Yahweh. She was homesick. And she said, since I've got to be here, I might as well bring some of the prophets from back home, so that I can expose them to different ways of thinking. So she summons 800 prophets of Baal to come over into the Hebrew territory so that she could expose them that there are other ways of worshiping God other than how y'all do it over here. I want you to understand the backdrop. I want you to see the topography. I want you to understand that she hated having to give up what she was used to, so she was trying to bring what she was used to with her into her new life. And 800 prophets of Baal have now emerged down on the Hebrew people, and she began to influence Ahab until Ahab was worshiping Baal like the prophets, and sometimes worshiping God. And Ahab knew better than that, but for the love of a woman, many a man. Yeah. This is as old as Adam and Eve. For the love of a woman, that whoever you let influence you impacts your decisions, your choices, and you wouldn't think that somebody you know in the flesh would impact how you see somebody you know in the spirit, but she had that kind of grip on him like Eve did over Adam, that little by little she was pulling him further and further away from God. And Ahab was becoming more decadent and more cruel and more mean. And so when she decided to start killing some of God's prophets, he went along with it, because once you open yourself up to something, you never know how far it's gonna go. Y'all didn't hear what I'm saying. Once you open yourself up to something, you never can be sure how far it's going to go. And all of a sudden they found themselves in a situation where they were killing the prophets. And Obadiah, who is the COO, he's running things up under King Ahab. He knows that it's wrong, but he's scared to say anything because they will kill him too. He did manage to sneak off a few prophets and hide them in a cave and leave them with some bread and some water so that they could survive. But in front of King Ahab, he confessed loyalty and committed himself to him because he did not want to die. And many of the Bible stories that we read about the widows and their husbands being killed, they were killed because Jezebel had turned that place into a bloodbath, and God got sick of it. Now, when God gets sick of something, it changes everything. Because we serve a God that knows how to deal with you. God's displeasure with her and how she expressed her displeasure led to a drought in the land. And God had sent a drought into the land so strong and so mighty and so debilitating that God said, I'm going to get your attention. Now, the Bible talks about a drought and a famine. These are root causes of the problem. And I want you to understand that when you start dealing with a drought, inevitably, you're going to have a famine. Because one problem creates a problem, another problem. It's like the pandemic and the economy. You can't fix the economy if you don't fix the pandemic, because one thing is feeding the other. Come on, somebody. You have to understand then that if you don't get down to the root of the problem and all you do is clip the leaves off the problem, it's going to keep growing back up again. And so you have to understand that anytime you have a pandemic, it's going to affect the economy and it's going to affect the emotions and well-being of the country. It's a domino effect. So when God sent a drought, he didn't have to send a famine. Because if you send the drought will send the famine. So the drought is the problem, but the famine is killing people. Good God of mercy. I said the drought is the problem, but the famine is killing people. And God said, I'm going to send a drought into the land until I get their attention, because they think they're strong and they're mighty. And they brought these two nations together and they think they're in control, but I'm going to bring them to their knees until they have to seek my face. I'll dry up everything. I'll dry up the brooks. I'll dry up the lakes. I'll dry up the streams. I'll dry up everything until everything starts dying. Because I will get your attention. I will get your attention. When I was in Africa, there was one place I went that they told me it got so dry in the areas where we were building wells that a woman gave birth looking for water. Can you imagine giving birth in a dry place looking for water? And she finally pushed her baby out. And the bees came and stung the baby and the mother to death because they saw the afterbirth as fluid. That's dry. That's very dry. A woman stung to death by desperate bees who are trying to survive a dry place. Have you ever had to try to survive a dry place? Have you ever gone into a situation of such destitution that people didn't even know that you were in a dry place? Your hair was done, your nails were done, you were smelling good and walking around, but nobody knew you were in a dry place. You had your shirt on and your tie. You had on your name brand stuff, but down in your soul, you were in a dry place. Have you ever been stung in a dry place? Something that you normally could escape and something that normally wouldn't even be interested in you. But when you're in a dry place, strange things start to happen. Oh, y'all don't hear what I'm saying. The drought has gotten so bad that King Ahab and Obadiah are searching for water to keep the livestock alive. This is all what precedes the text. They're searching for water, and Ahab says to Obadiah, you go this way and I'll go this way so that we can keep the cattle alive and the livestock alive, and they are in a dry place. Have you ever been preoccupied, not with success, just survival, just trying to hold it together? I'm just trying to hold it together. Somebody right now, you're not worried about a yacht or a Bentley or a Mercedes or a private jet or a penthouse suite. You say, Lord, I'll stay right here. I'm just trying to hold down what I got right now. Which way do I need to go? Which way do I need to look? I'm trying to hold it down. 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 Because I am in a dry place.